Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome. Today's show is titled Cutting Edge Teaching and Learning. Recently, I watched the video Anne of Green Gables, and I was reminded of the, and this is in quotation marks, the cutting edge technology of that time. You know, the chalkboards, the slates, the pencils, sharing pencils, in fact. But the definition of technology as we use it today has a number of meanings. It can mean the branch of knowledge that deals with the use of technical means and how it relates to life and society. And then it also is the application of the knowledge of practical ends. And of course, for a teacher, this means learning how to help students learn in their styles with whatever tools they can possibly find in preparation for the workplace. It also means the terminology of art and science. It's kind of a technical nomenclature. Scientific or industrial process, an invention, a method, or the likes, and the sum of the ways in which social groups provide themselves with the material objects of their civilization. So as we're talking about cutting edge teaching and learning, we can think of this framework for the word technology, because technology is cutting edge teaching and learning. And to help me with the topic is Raylinda Robach. She's a young woman just finishing up her Master's of Teaching at Frostburg State University. Welcome, Ray. We're going to set the stage by you telling us a little bit about your family so our listeners can relate to you not only as a student, but as a whole person.
Well, thank you. And so for those out there who don't know me, I'm a mom of three very hyper boys, 10, 6, and 3. And I was able to teach for a couple years before my first son was born. And then I became a stay-at-home mom and just focused in on them. And now I'm finding myself getting back into the workforce and getting a career as a teacher. I'm very excited.
So in your family life, do you have pets?
Oh, my. Oh, and I do have a husband, too.
Yes,
does he classify as a
pet? Yeah, we need to include him.
So yes, my husband's Brian, and we have a dog, Tank, and he's very beloved and very old. And we have a lizard, Sandy Andy. And we have a cat that we rescued last summer, and his name is Shadow. My husband does not like him, but we love him to death. And we now have three fish.
Wow.
Oh, and the fish's names are Cookies and Cream and Oreo and Godzilla.
So in this, you know, you've painted this picture, which sounds like very busy and very interactive and helping your children grow and nurturing them. You decided to go back to school and get this teaching credential. So describe a little bit the program that you've been able to qualify for.
Well, I searched and searched because I knew I wanted to be a teacher, but I didn't have the degree or certification. I looked at online courses, and I finally found the program at Frostburg State University. I called them, and they're like, oh, it's a one-year program. You have to have all of these classes already towards a teaching degree and a portfolio. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. So I just sent them everything. Luckily, my bachelor's degree took me 10 years because I changed my major a couple times. And so I did have all of the qualifying courses that I needed. And then I had to learn the Google portfolio. And that was time consuming, but I learned it and had to interview, and it was a long process, and I didn't know if I was going to make it, but I did. They welcomed me with open arms, and now I'm almost through.
Praise God. you know, others who might feel the calling towards teaching should look and see if there is a program in their area that they could do that. Because even though I imagine it's quite intense, you take coursework plus you do student teaching all in the same year. Okay, so what materials and equipment, what were the physical things you had to have?
I was required to buy an iPad. That was the supervisor of the program. Her requirement for us was to have an iPad. And along with that, we had to buy lots and lots of different apps. We had to know Google very well, the Google Docs. We had to know the applications for that.
Well, let me ask something about Google Docs. Yes. I hate to interrupt, but with Google Docs, do you see that becoming or taking the place of Microsoft Office?
Yes, it really actually almost has completely in our university. And I've been to two other schools where that's what they use fully for communication with the teachers, with the principal, even with Washington County, the actual administration part of it. They use all Google. I also know that Smithsburg High School uses it in this area, too. They use all Google.
So it has all of, I'm familiar with Microsoft Office, so it has like a PowerPoint, a type of PowerPoint. It has a way to share documents.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, is that you can add someone to your file and they can share and get all of your documents in seconds, which is amazing and really great for teachers when they're
and
sharing.
It probably automatically archives it.
Yes,
so
it does.
Don't risk losing.
When I broke my computer, I lost everything, and I could go onto the Googles and get all my stuff back, which was great.
Wow, that is a blessing. Okay, so now the instruction that's being delivered to you by your teachers, do they use these applications? I mean, do you actually have to go in and, I don't know, into maybe an Edmodo thing?
Yeah, well, we've used Edmodo as well. But it's mainly the Googles and the Google Docs. And our classroom is basically paper-free. Everything we do through either Google or through the Blackboard, every assignment is entered in there. Questions and answers are done on Google. If we need to contact a professor, that's the fastest way to do it, is just to write up a note. If we need to contact our classmates for questions, just write up a note on Google and it goes to them. So that's, yeah.
It's, so are they using Google Docs instead of these other, like, I think when I first started and it was a web-based way, it was called WebCert, and then I worked with Blackboard, and then I worked with Angel, and...
Well, Blackboard is through our university that they use that mainly for everything. But this program itself, they really focus on Google because they really think it's this next big up-and-coming thing that everyone is going to be using. They don't do any of the other stuff. I know there's Edmodo. Mm-hmm. They've taught us that, but they don't use it unless it's for an assignment for that.
Mm-hmm.
They've taught us a bunch of different other apps that we've used for communication, but really Google is the main one.
Yeah, and I think of paperless, and of course for my age group, that just is totally mind-boggling. I can't imagine having a paperless.
It's kind of an ongoing trial because Frederick of the county next to us, they've actually required that the teachers not make copies. It's a paperless school system, and Washington County hasn't gotten there yet, but I can't imagine what it's going to be like if we do.
Now, if you go paperless, that means every child has to have a Google account.
Google account and iPad.
iPad and a Google email.
Yes.
Now, do you think there's any resistance from parents with that type of technology?
I am absolutely sure there is lots of resistance. There are some schools that have iPads for every kid and they have the appropriate measures to keep them safe. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's why Washington County hasn't gone completely paperless yet, because of that concern.
Yeah, because how young could you go down with that type of a system? That is truly cutting edge.
I worked with first graders this year that have their own iPad and they have their own account, and they've communicated with me through Google. First graders.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
Unbelievable. When you started in the classroom, now I imagine you had some classes before they actually put you in, but I don't know.
Maybe they just didn't at the same time. I'm lucky because I came with a background of education. My family is in education. I thought for sure that's where I was going to go. I changed my mind and God said, no, you need to be in education. So I had that background. But most of my classmates had never been in a classroom. They came from completely different jobs. One was worked for the IRS and one works for the military.
And what were their ages?
We have from 60 down to 22.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and they all just have the calling to be teachers. And so this summer we started, and it was very intense. And we got a good, solid background. Poor people who've never been in education, they were sweating it. But they once they got into the classroom, they were somewhat prepared.
Yeah, so control your life from how you dressed and
during class at all times we had to be dressed as professionals. We had to wear closed-toed shoes. We had to wear dress pants. Skirts had to be knee length. Clothing had to be very
modest.
Yes, very modest, which is wonderful. We had some students who got in very big trouble because they just had never learned how to dress modest.
And this is a secular university
university requiring this. We dressed very, very nice. We were very professional during the hot summer months. Long pants or dresses.
Wow.
And we took a lot of courses. I think it was 15 credits in 2 months that we finished. And then we started on our 12 credit course along with student teaching.
Oh, wow.
So 2 nights a week we were in, or 2 days a week we were in school till the evening or till the night, and then we were in the classroom.
Well, we've got to take a break right here, but I want to talk about your student teaching. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Education Currents. Be sure and like us on our Education Currents Facebook page and consider joining MRG Media in this radio ministry. You can call us anytime at 301-824-3162 or write to MRG Media at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Welcome back. I'm here with Raylinda Roback, and we're talking about cutting edge learning and teaching. And we just had through her summer where it was quite intensive with all the coursework. She's with a cohort of various ages from 60 years to 22. And these people have all felt the calling for teaching. And I was surprised to discover that they required such a professional demeanor as far as your dress and how, and the language that you used. And, you know, it kind of does my heart well to know that we are creating that kind of professional for public school. So now you're walking into the classroom, and it's been a while. And I just have to ask what that first day was like.
I was so nervous. And I don't know why, because I love kids. I've taught before, but I've never actually been in a public school setting. So that was very new. And I had never met my mentor who was going to be following me and observing me and teaching me for that semester. So I was quite nervous. But when I got in and got to see the kids, all my nerves went away because I could focus on them. Mm-hmm. And that's really why I want to be a teacher, is for those kids. So, phew.
How many students?
I started off with 19. And I guess with public school, and this is new to me as well, there's always a lot of change. Students come and students go. And all depends on your area that you live in as well. And started out with 19. Went to 15 and then ended up with 21.
Wow.
At my ending of the first practicum, the first teaching mm-hmm. experience. And they were a joy, and they were goofy. We had a large group of boys and about five girls. And
So you could see where your experience with boys.
With my three boys, yes, definitely. I could relate to them very well. The girls were wonderful. And we had a large range of ability as well. A lot of above-level students and quite a few below-level students. So that was interesting to see how in one grade level we're really teaching maybe three or four mm-hmm. levels.
Yes. Yes, so your multi-grade teaching experience didn't help with that.
Yes, it did.
You can see how God has led you. What was one of the things that surprised you the most? I mean, I'm sure there were a number of things, but...
The thing that surprised me the most was that after months and months of teaching or learning Google and getting our iPads and preparing for tech in our school system... When I walked into the classroom, it looked just like the classroom that I taught in. And there weren't all these iPads everywhere and
it looked just like
smart boards and Promethean boards. The tech wasn't there.
So it was just like the classroom way back when you had done your...
Yeah, exactly like the classroom when I had taught for 2 years. There were two very old computers, big screen, wide box screened computers in the back, and that was it.
Did the teacher use those computers very much?
She did use them. There were a couple reading programs that the students got to play on during our reading session, our reading time when they had a break, they had finished their work, they got to play on those, but only with those two programs for reading. Yeah. That's all the kids did on the computers. So that was a big shock to me. Now, I do know that there's some other schools that have gone full tech and every mm-hmm. child has an iPad. And so I think that the university knowing this needed to teach us that we need to start preparing know our technology because the students will know it more than us. But in this case, in this school, they didn't know more and the teacher didn't know more. I ended up teaching my teacher mm-hmm. about tech.
So now you mentioned whiteboard or smart boards and Promethean boards?
Promethean boards.
Yeah, describe the difference.
A Promethean board is a unit on its own, and you can do everything on it, write on it.
So it's like an interactive huge screen.
Yes, interactive huge screen. I really do like them, but they can have their limitations as well. A smart board... You have to have the computer program. You have to. I watched my teacher and I did this a couple times where you have to line up all mm-hmm. the different angles to get it good. And sometimes it will go off in the middle of your teaching mm-hmm. and then you have to reline it up. And that's a little frustrating as well. And I think with all tech, you're going to always mm-hmm. have something happen. And so you have to prepare for that and make sure you have everything in line if your smart board goes crazy.
Yeah. And if you have... If the kids have their own iPads and you're connected up to a big board, you can flash their screen up at any time.
So I like that a lot.
Yes. It's marvelous what technology has done for education and learning. But
it is.
It only is as good as the human beings behind it that implement it.
Exactly. It's only as good as the teacher.
Describe what... You know, as you foresee going into the classroom, describe what you think will be some of the main applications you use. If money was no object, and what do you really think would be most beneficial?
I really like the dock cameras. I like them because I can put up a worksheet. Since we are still a paper school, mm-hmm. I can put up any kind of worksheet that the kids are working on, and I can work it through with them. And they can see it on this big, big screen. I love that.
To go from student to student.
Yeah. I can put up a poem and read it with them and they can read, they can follow along. I can draw and they can see what I'm drawing. So I really do like that. I think it has a lot of different applications that you can use with it, even though it's just a dock camera. And I think iPads, I would love it if every student could have an iPad. There's going to be kids that blossom with technology. There might be kids that don't blossom mm-hmm. with technology. And that's why we really focus on the universal design of learning.
Yes. And now the universal design,
UDL.
UDL. UDL is cutting edge.
Yes.
Tell our listeners a little bit about UDL.
Well, I'm not an expert at all in it. And I've only been really learning and focusing on it for about 6 months or so. But I love it. And it's the idea that we need to be teaching for all different abilities, or I don't know if abilities is the word, but those who learn with their motor skills. Yeah,
kinesthetic.
Kinesthetic and visual and so forth. We need to teach. Our lessons need to be taught for all those learners. And so it's not that we're just having one lesson where we're giving a worksheet and we're giving an assessment and boom, they have to know it. We have to come up with some really creative ways to teach for all our kids. And it's very true. Our kids learn in different ways, and that's how it should be done. I put a lot of music into my lessons. We sing a lot of questions and answers. We sing the things that I want them to do, like sitting down and being quiet. I sing to them about it, and they really listen and perk up, and mm-hmm. they do it.
Now, did you come into your student teaching doing that, or does your mentor also do that?
I'm really lucky because my mentor is very musical, and she didn't sing directions, you know, like, I want you to sit at your seats now, but singing
Can
it.
Can you sing that for us?
Well, the one I like, and everyone always says, okay, put a bubble in your mouth and don't pop it. Well, I'm like, well, what if you sing it? Like, yeah. Put a bubble in your mouth, in your mouth, put a bubble in your mouth, in your mouth. If you pop that bubble, and I usually make my voice go a little crazy, you'll be in trouble. And they love that. Put a bubble in your mouth, in your mouth. And so they just think it's the best thing ever.
And they all probably
they go, all put a bubble in their mouth, and they kind of snicker when I make my voice go kind of, you'll be in trouble.
But they do it.
But they do it. And they respect me. Not that I'm going to be always fun, but they know that I love them and care for them, and that I can have a good time while giving them instructions on what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to behave. So that's what I brought to my teacher. But she sings a lot. We have morning songs. We have math songs, and we have...
Days of the week.
Yes, the days of the week, and then the months, and how to stand in line. We sing all those
songs.
And
you were teaching first grade.
Yes, first grade. But I will be singing, because I will be in fifth grade, the coming practicum.
Yes.
I will be singing to them as well, because they're kids too.
You know, I sung to the seventh and eighth graders all the different formulas and everything.
Yeah. And for some, it really connects. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of the universal design for learning, is that some people will really connect with the music part of it.
Well, Ray, we're almost to the end of our show. I wondered what words of advice you would have for parents of school-age children going into public school.
You know, it's not as scary as you might think. Especially at the elementary level. The teachers truly love their kids, and the principal truly wants every child to succeed and will go above and beyond. At least that's what I have seen. And so that's what I would say. If that's what I would probably want to hear, if my kids had to go to public school, that's probably what I would want to hear, is that they will be loved and they will be taken care of. And they will learn, and that's a comfort.
Yes, and we need to acknowledge that our public school system was designed to provide for every child and to value every child.
Yes.
So we still want to acknowledge that, and I appreciate you bringing that out. I just have one last thing to say, and that is, keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word.